This veteran shout out's brought to you by HHA USA. Go to HHAUSA.org and check out the Operation HHA USA. Let's see. I just messed that up.
Here we go.
This one's submitted by Larry Buckle, and the veteran is Michael Seelman. He was in the Army. Says, my wife's uncle, Michael Seelman, was a great man who had utmost integrity. He received a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star in Vietnam. He was a great hunter, but mostly really enjoyed trapping. He became the president of the Trapping Association in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I want to once again thank him for what he did to allow us to do what we do every day. Sorry, I messed up too. Unfortunately, we lost him too soon to cancer. Miss you, Uncle Mike.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
So thanks for your service, Uncle Michael. Mike.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sounds like a badass.
Easy, brother.
Yeah, yep. And trapping, huh? That's cool.
He's very president cool. of the trapping.
That's insane. Yeah. Trapping seems so difficult.
Dude, it's intimidating to me.
I don't know anything about it, but I respect the shit out of it, you know?
Yeah. Like,
but it seems like you have to have three times as much time than like bow hunting to do trapping. Because don't you have to check your traps every single day?
Oh, yeah.
You should, yeah. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Not for me, but I respect the hell out of it. Cool. Thanks for your service, Uncle Mike.
Thanks for your service. Thanks for spending that, Larry.
Thanks, man. Hey, guys. Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. The podcast is presented by Elite Archery. We've been shooting Elite for a long time. Proudly made in America, if that matters to you. It should.
USA.
We challenge you to take the shootability challenge with Elite. Go to a local dealer. Find a dealer that carries Elite and just give one a try. You might love it. We love them. And
that's all we ask.
We think you'd enjoy it, too. So check out EliteArchery.com. Use code WCB there. Pretty easy. The podcast is also brought to you by Big Tine. And Big Tine, if you live in a state that offers supplemental feed, they have that. And they have food plot seeds. So something for everyone. Use code WCB2021 to save yourself some coin on some good stuff for your deer.
Cha-ching.
You're going to like it.
Or whatever animals
I
might
guarantee
eat.
It.
I guarantee it. That's all.
You're going to like the way your buck looks. I guarantee it.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah, see like that?
The podcast is also brought to you by Loophold Optics. Very proud of that partnership. We love Loophold, based out of Beaverton, Oregon.
That's right.
Great people, great products, from rangefinders to binos to spotting scopes for us. We don't really use the rifle scopes because we're not into gun hunting as much, but they make great scopes too. Mm-hmm. Performance eyewear, they got it all. We think you'll like it. Loophold Optics, check them out. Tell them that we sent you. That helps out. Mm-hmm. The Midwest Takeover is what we're calling it. Loophold is going to be more and more involved in the whitetail game as
everywhere.
As we work together. So give them a shot before you just go buy whatever is at your big box store. You know, go out and play with the Loophold. Also, Spy Point cameras from Accellink, which is a great entry way to get into some spy points, to the Link Micros. They really have a lineup for everybody at a good price.
Great price.
And you can be an insider club on there. You get different pricing on your plans and entered into giveaways and all sorts of good stuff like that. If you're going to buy a cell cam, just check them out.
We think they have a free plan for 100 pictures a month.
Which is sweet during the summer.
Yep.
Sweet during the summer or in a spot where you don't get a ton of traffic.
Yeah.
So, and you get better pricing with the Insiders Club, or you can kind of just price out what works for you or do the free plan. Why not? Rogue Ridge e-bikes, the entry and exit strategy for a lot of people come in and out of the deer woods and even probably the western woods, whatever they're hunting, e-bikes are changing the way. No scent trail, silent, and it's fun.
Yep.
I think people just forget it's fun.
Hell, you can even ride over to your buddy's house and drink a few beers, you know?
I mean, maybe you've done it.
No.
I'd never do that.
No.
The podcast also brought to you by Scent Crusher. Been working with Scent Crusher for a long time. I know, you know, you can't always go scent free no matter what, but it helps to go in as scent free as possible. Mm-hmm. Always play the wind, but why not take every precaution that you can, especially if you're hunting mature whitetails. You're dumb not to try it.
Go the extra mile.
Yeah, go the extra mile. From the gear bag, the roller bag, everything. Love our Scent Crusher stuff. Check them out, scentcrusher.com. And then that all being said, with another one of our partners that kind of ties into all our other partners is Old Barn Taxidermy.
Yep.
You know, you spend your hard-earned money on some of these products that we believe in, people behind the product that believe in us in order to partner with us. Don't go cheap on your taxidermy. Two things I don't cheap on, tattoos and taxidermy. It's pretty good.
Right. Boom.
And that's it. Everything else, maybe I'm cheap out, but
I'm a cheap ass.
I'm over it. I pay for convenience anytime I can.
Like I'm shopping at Harbor Freight, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm a Pittsburgh man, so what's up?
That's right.
And also Novix tree stands. We have a code for them, working class 21 for 15% off, and novixoutdoors.com. You can get into an American made tree stand, for real, like really reasonably priced. And you can get into one for under, bare stand with offset bracket, 9.2 pounds. That's pretty kick-ass.
That is kick-ass.
That's pretty awesome. Kick-ass. And what's great about them, they are local to us. Mm-hmm. So that's even better. Made in USA. They're proud of that, and we're proud to be partnered with them.
That's
pretty
right.
Awesome. Back in the tree stand game. So check them out. That's code Working Class 21. I always go WCB like in my head. Working Class 21 for 15% off. Mm-hmm. Tell them we sent you.
Hey.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast, and we hope you enjoy it. We got through them so you can get to the show. Thanks for being here.
I'm Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Bachman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
It is the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast, episode 466.
Woo.
What's that in Spanish, Larry?
I cannot remember.
466, or I'm not even going to do that.
I think five is cinco.
Well, we should probably not attempt any of this.
No, we should.
It'd go from fun to offensive real fast, and that's all by accident. Thank you for being here. Thank you for tuning into the show. This is exciting. We have some great guests in the studio.
That's right.
Larry Mack.
Yes, sir.
What's
Larry
up,
Mack in the house, man. I'm happy to be here. I've been watching this studio unfold via social media, and to see it in person is really something special. It looks way better in person.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, that is good to hear.
Thank you for making the drive.
You guys have done an amazing job. I mean, it's a
thank you.
It absolutely looks awesome.
Thanks, man.
After saying that,
we got Ryan in here too.
What's going on, guys?
This is your first time you were on a recording with us.
Uh-huh.
You've always been like filming and doing photos.
He's always
and stuff.
Been in the background.
I'm more of a behind the scenes guy.
Yeah, yeah. You're good at what you do.
Thank you.
Get
thank
your beautiful you, face
you
on
were,
the camera.
He was doing some like I didn't know you were actually even doing them. That's how good you are. You were like taking photos, but I didn't know what you were doing. He's like, hey, you got an iPhone? Air plays me this like, it's like a 6-second clip that blew my mind.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus, man.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you know, the thing is, the story behind Ryan and stuff too is, I guess Ryan's dad and I were friends from way back in the day. And then Ryan was just knee high to a grasshopper when I first saw him, and we were waterfowl hunting and, you know, deer hunting, just talking hunting in general. And, and as he was growing up, I was hunting with his dad, and Ryan, I could see he was taking liking to, you know, the production side of things. And, and really it was really becoming a passion, you know, he was asking questions, not only to me, but other friends of his and stuff as well. So, you know, seeing that it's always good to be able to, you know, pass that along through my early days with Heartland Bowhunter and, you know, growing up on the production side, you know, I appreciate that fact of being able to tell a story through, you know, behind the lens and, you know, have their own vision, not just go out and say, hey, man, did you see what these people do? I want to go duplicate it.
Right, right.
But yet see it in a different light to be able to, and do it your own way.
Like attacking it at your own angle.
Yeah. So when Ryan was getting older and older, you know, it was funny. I'll never forget the day I called him and said, hey, you know, you want to come work? He's like, say what? He's like, say what? Yeah.
And, excuse me?
I was actually on the way to the Iowa Deer Classic.
Oh,
and he
okay.
called me. I was driving up there to go to the Classic, and he called me. He's like, hey, I want to offer you a job. I was like, okay. Like, doing what? He's like, well, you want to be a producer for the Outdoor Group? I'm like, yes.
Yes.
Do you want to know how much you're going to make? No.
I'm in.
Yep. Yeah, I'm in.
You got to sling in hot rivets, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I'm good.
That's awesome.
Well, it takes that passion. And, you know, in today's world, we kind of lose that, you know, because it's, and, you know, I saw the passion in him early and
probably that same passion that you had at one time.
Yeah.
Like, when you got
exactly,
stuff,
you know, and so being able to hop behind the lens and, you know, have just as much fun as it is actually going out and doing hunting, because, you know, I looked at it, you know, from through all the people I filmed in the industry over the years, you know, that person didn't just shoot that deer. I shot it, but just with a different piece of equipment.
Right.
And, you know, we were just a part of that. You know, having two people up in a tree can be difficult and times, and sometimes, you know, it's a sacrifice. You know, you've got to have a lot of level of commitment that a lot of people, you know, struggle with, and that's totally fine.
And that's almost, you're almost as important as them shooting the deer, you know, because you got to make sure you get that on video.
To be able to document it and document it in a way that's, you know, that I guess that people can relate to,
right.
You know, from A to Z,
mm-hmm.
you know, and telling a story without saying a word just can be pretty hard to do. And I think that, you know, we do a pretty good job of it. I mean, we can always do better. I'm our own worst critic, and I know Ryan is as well. You know, so we just continue to try to push the bar and raise the bar, I guess, for us personally. You know, we have our own style, and we're going to stick to it.
Ryan makes you look really good on TV.
he needs more credit.
I know.
Why. He does need more credit. This guy needs a raise.
Oh, yeah, right. You ain't kidding. He does, and he works hard, and I appreciate all.
You're always, you can tell you're passionate about it, because even we're here, like, hanging out, and you're like, you're still just like kind of doing something.
He's over there on his laptop doing God knows what.
Well, that's cool. The fun part too is I get to show everybody else what's happening in our world. And I think it's because I come from the waterfowl. It's a really social sport. You know, you get to hang out with everybody and everybody gets to see what you're doing. You know, you got 10 guys with you and everybody's doing, and then it goes to deer hunting. You're like, okay, it's just me and him.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to look just like him.
And quiet.
Yeah, it's quiet. Everything's quiet. And I just really enjoy that part of it, to where I get to show everyone else like what we're experiencing in the woods, and then hear everybody else's stories, and then start correlating everybody. You know.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
And two, like Paul Biggs, obviously a lot of people know Biggs. He's through, because he's been in the industry.
He's been on the podcast before.
He's been on the podcast before, and he's a very intricate part of our team as well, not only at the Outdoor Group, but Respect the Game.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, I mean, we've got a solid team of good guys, kind of like you all, you know, buddies that work together, understand, you know, and honestly, it's, you know, we want to share every experience we have.
Yeah.
In a positive way, regardless how, you know, how much we jackass around or whatever. You know?
Right.
It's just,
well, we don't do that.
Yeah.
We're very professional.
Hey, I've been at camp with you. You can't.
That would be a good time over here.
Yeah, and you don't even. You just need to sit over there, Dale.
Sit there, shut your
mouth. There's no limit to having fun.
Yeah, exactly. There's no limit to having fun.
Well, before we deep dive in a little further, if someone hasn't heard a previous podcast with you, I know you've been on, I mean, a handful of times now, or wasn't already familiar with your guys' work with Outdoor Group or Respect the Game, maybe just kind of say who you guys are. And I want to get into a little bit of your background. We might have touched on it in the past, but I think for people that are newer, because there's a lot of newer to the outdoor community people that listen now, probably more than ever. And what I mean by that is, like, people who just got into hunting that are discovering podcasts and discovering hunting shows, so they might not know the timeline. You know what I mean? So I think that's worth breaking down.
For sure. So myself, I'm Larry McCoy. People call me Larry Mack. My segue kind of into the industry was through field production and behind the lens. A buddy of mine, Jeff Simpson, we had started a show way back when. Jeff had actually I met him in a bow shop, actually. And we both, my stepbrother Ty, which is currently on Heartland Bow Hunter as well, Ty Easley, we filmed our own hunts, just really for our own personal,
for fun.
Just for fun. You know, we could go back and relive that moment.
Yeah, then I raised and stuff.
So we were filming each other, and then I ran into Jeff at a bow shop, and we started talking. He's like, well, I film hunts too. And literally, it was in the spring, So literally like 2 days later, I went and filmed him on a turkey hunt, an archery turkey hunt with no blind. And I filmed him shoot a turkey and things just kind of gelled from there. So we started, talking about and just continued filming hunts and so on and so forth. And, and everything kind of grew from there. And then the staff started to grow. Mike and Sean are great friends of mine as well. I mean, they live right in myself's area. Working and everything, Mike and Sean were super young, and they would come and show us footage, and they just had the passion as well, and it shows through everything that they put out as well. You know, they're very talented producers, and as you know, the whole HB staff. And so as time evolved, you know, things happen. You know, I had kids and everything, so everybody's lives changed.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike and Sean kind of took over HB and have done a phenomenal job with it. And then I just started freelance videoing. So I freelance videoed for Sub7, for several different companies and production companies through Nashville, and did a lot of things. Was fortunate enough to, you know, to draw a paycheck, I guess, at the time.
Right. Yeah.
So with that being said, we just, you know, it evolved. And then I got a phone call to go film some stuff for Elite. And this is when Elite was a very small company.
Mm-hmm. Like what year is this roughly?
This is probably, I'm going to say 2009, maybe 2010.
Well before the Energy series.
Yes, yeah. Before the Energy series.
Mm-hmm. A year after I graduated.
So I was just kind of freelance doing little video stuff whenever they were, you know, they were acquired by Pete Crawford Pete was like, man, I've watched some of the stuff that you've done, because Elite was actually a partner of HB at one time.
Mm.
So we kind of formed a friendship, and he was like, what do you think about this show? You know, we call it Respect the Game. And I was like, all right. So we started filming a few hunts, and I was just freelancing for him, not doing a whole lot in front of the camera at all. And lo and behold, I go on an elk trip. They're like, hey, we're going to do an elk hunt. We got these, you know, dealer event. We're going to Colorado. So I show up out there, and when I show up there, Pete and Dave Rotano, Skinny Dave is what they call him, handed me a map and basically said, I want you to come work for me. This is going to be your territory. So, and I was a sales rep. He said, I want you to be a sales rep for us. So that's what I started off with the outdoor group doing, but I was continuing to video as well. So
yeah.
it was a lot to do
lot
for
mix.
A small company. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This fly in the studio needs to fucking
dude,
die.
Dude. Yeah. It's insane.
Dude, I watched
it. Keeps laying on my hand.
Dude, I didn't think eyes could do that, but literally your left eye crossed your right eye.
Get it, Eric.
Yeah.
I saw it on my bill of my hat.
So, yeah.
No. I saw that fucker get in here, and I'm like, that's going to be a problem.
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah. We need one of those bug of salt guns. Sorry, Larry.
No, that's good. I was a sales rep for a while, along with freelancing. Respect the Game came to life. And then, lo and behold, Elite started to grow. We came out with the Energy series. And that's kind of the bow, I would say, the lineup that kind of put Elite on the map.
That's a lineup that put it on the map for me anyway. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, being realistic, I mean, there's a lot of great bow companies out there. Don't get me wrong. There mm-hmm. are, but the Energy series is kind of what, where Elite kind of, put its foot down to, we're here.
Yeah, definitely.
So once that happened, we continue. We were obviously selling more product, and I wasn't an employee of the company yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right then, actually, I was a sales rep, but I wasn't like in the office or doing anything. I'm still not in the office, but they came to me and said, I think you need to be in a marketing role, because we'd go to shows and stuff, and just you build a lot of relationships going through, through a lot of the trade shows and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's where you build a lot of your relationships.
Yeah, being at hunt camps and just traveling around,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge sacrifice for, at home, for family life. You got to remember I had two little kids at the time, and, so we did that, and they're like, well, here's the thing. I want you to become, once you move over to marketing. I was like, okay, how do you do that? How do you do that? Right? You're like, basically just do everything you're doing, but you just make it available for everybody to see. Okay. All right. Okay. So everybody to see, not just one destination. This guy go everywhere. Social media came. So now there's so many different ways to market that, you know, obviously we got to bring in more people. So I became the media director of the outdoor group as the outdoor group was growing and acquiring more brands. I became the media director. Therefore, Ryan's hired, you know, Ryan's on board, Paul's on board. We have an awesome team of people that's trying to keep stuff visible in front for the end consumer. And and one thing that I will say about the outdoor group, brother, you know, and I'll just squash it right here. I mean, I'm not afraid to say anything. The people that say, you know, the outdoor group was, you know, going out of business two or three years ago, Wong, they're not.
Wrong.
Wrong. Yeah, yeah.
They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, wrong answer. We're not going anywhere. We've got a great team of people. I mean, if people can go up and see that facility, just the momentum, the attitudes when you walk in there, it's very refreshing. I mean, you got an indoor range. You know, people go and take the breaks, and it's full. The line's full of people shooting their bows. You go out back, they're shooting 3D targets. You got smiles on people's faces. So,
trust me,
I know I've said it on the podcast before, but I take a lot of pride in that because it's hard to find.
I've been in a lot of shops before, and you can tell when people hate their jobs.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You can tell right away.
Most jobs, honestly. Yeah. It's sad, but most jobs are like that.
Ryan, pitch in just so it's not for me. Whenever we walk in up there, what do people do?
It's archery 100% of the time.
Yep. High-fiving. Yep. I mean, high-fiving.
That's impressive. Hunt. Is there like a lunch league?
They had a league going on between all the workers there for a while. I know they did last year right before COVID hit. But
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys ever get a chance to go up there, you'll see it.
I'd love to go up there.
We're going to schedule a trip out there for sure.
Absolutely.
That would be a lot of fun. We've talked about it in the past. We got to just do it.
You know,
any one of the guys on the line running in the machines, if you walk up there, they will stop. They will pull you over there and say, "Hey, let's show you how this is done.
Check
this out.
They'll
show you every step of how that bow is made throughout the line, color it. I mean, run it on the machines. I mean,
see, that's cool.
It's a really cool process.
We need to set a date and just do it.
Yeah, well, exactly. And just so people often wonder, you know, what goes into a bow. You know, they see is you go into an archery shop and you see
it's hanging there.
Yeah, it's hanging there.
Right.
But I can tell you, there's upwards of 40 sets of hands that touch every single bow that goes to each consumer. So before it's hanging on the peg at a bow shop, 40 sets of hands have seen that. And there's a process in which it's checked through to make sure that everything is right.
Intolerance and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Before it leaves the building. Now, we're all human. So, I mean, there's...
Shit can't happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shit can't happen.
Shipping sucks ass, too.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
But 40 sets of hands. You know, think about that. That's a lot. And, you know, when today's with the supply chain issues and stuff that's going on, we've experienced a tough year. The whole industry has. It's up as a whole sales. I'm glad to see more people hitting the woods. But I'm super, super proud of the team at the Outdoor Group.
That's awesome.
I'll stand proud saying that because Tommy Gomez, the guy that leads the factory up there, Josh Sidebottom, you know, them guys, I mean, they're gamers, man.
Yeah.
They are gamers. The staff has rallied behind them. They've been working 24 hours. And, you know, we've been able to ship pretty darn well across the brands despite all the difficulties that we've all seen.
Yeah. It's... Dude, I love Elite. Honestly, I discovered, and we've told this briefly in the past, the Energy Series kind of reeled me in. I grew up shooting a certain brand, which I grew up shooting Hoyt, but I was like tunnel vision to that because I didn't have any influence anywhere else. And then got a little older, and was the first year we really started the podcast, and I started experimenting with other bows, and we both pretty much bought our Synergies the same time. It seemed like
You traded yours in, and I think I bought one the next week.
Yeah, and just fell in love with the shootability of it.
Right.
And that's what you guys always say. But no, I absolutely love it. And, you know, it's a dream come true to go from that to you guys being the title sponsor of our podcast this year. It's pretty crazy.
It's pretty wild.
And we actually, last night in the studio, our guest asked us, "Hey, you like those Elites? Love them. Would you be shooting them if they weren't a sponsor?" It's like, we did shoot them before they were a sponsor. Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you know what I mean? It's
And I'll never diss on any other bow companies because they're all good. They're just all great bows. And
just what you like out of them.
Yeah, just it's really personal preference. And you brought up shootability. That term was coined and born at Elite Archery. Nobody knew what shootability was. And we're not saying that, you know, hey, we're the best bow, which, you know, I prefer an Elite. I'm not being biased. I just do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just because the bow is very comfortable to shoot. And people that have listened to me on the podcast before have heard me say over and over again, if you're comfortable, you're going to shoot better.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, Elite is a very comfortable bow to shoot.
Yeah.
It means you can shoot a more relaxed shot. You can focus on a process that gets overlooked, which is aiming so much. A lot of people are they're pinned driving by that target and, you know, can't get it to slow down and settle in. Mm-hmm. So once it gets close, they're punching that trigger off.
Right.
Well, Elite, that bow allows you to relax and really focus on the aiming process so you can execute a good shot.
You put that bow on cruise control and it does the rest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it literally is. But every bow company makes a phenomenal piece of equipment.
Tell people, they'll ask me, what Elite should I get? I'm like, honestly, go to a bow shop and shoot every brand out there.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's a good. Let's start with this. I mean, from what you guys are seeing this year, what's probably the most popular model of Elite this year?
Man, that's a loaded question because right now the Encore and the Remedy are probably neck and neck, just because some people like a little shorter axle, which is only 33 inches, but and then it's only 1 inch difference, but there are totally different feels.
Mm-hmm. There's a Harley going by. What's up?
Yeah.
What's up? Sick.
Nice.
Sick.
But the thing is the Remedy, and I'll just say it, you know, it is the smoothest bow Elite has ever put on the market.
That's what I'm shooting. I love it.
Hands down. Hands down the smoothest bow we've ever built. Encore is going to give you a little more oomph. It's going to pop a little bit, you know, more feet per second. But they're both awesome shooting rigs. So it's probably neck and neck between those two.
Yeah. It's preference, really, what the individual wants.
Yeah, absolutely. But with that being said, you know, 2 years ago, when we released the Ember?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the Ember was released, and in my opinion, it's gained a lot of a huge head of steam because it's a great bow at the price point. Affordable bow that feels like a bow should feel because it does come with limb stops. A lot of bows in that category, you don't have a solid back wall. It's super spongy. So if a new archer's coming in or even somebody that, you know, just needs a new bow but can't afford $1,000 bow.
Yeah.
Well, they can draw back and feel what that back wall's supposed to feel like.
Because there's a lot of other like cheaper bows that I've drawn back and, like I my wife had another brand of a cheaper bow and I would draw back and I'd be like, yeah, I think it's at full draw. And then I'd be like, cause you know, I like checking it for and helping her tune it in. And I'd draw back and then I'd be at full draw on the draw stops, whatever that would be. And then it'd be like,
yeah, just keeps wanting to go.
It pulls back another inch. Sure. It feels like, you know, so it's like, and I could notice her doing that too, would come back anchor. And then she'd be like, I feel inconsistent because it feels solid one time and then not the next. So I mean, that's a problem, especially learning. Like she's just trying to find the groove and the consistency of it. So that's actually really important that you pointed out, I think, for a new archer.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a great, in my opinion, it's a best in class product. And it's really, you know, gained a lot of traction over the last year or so as well. So I would say, you know, top of the line, you know, you're looking at Encore Remedy, the set technology. We've had several, you know, retailers reach out and say, man, this has made our life so easy. You know, being able to tune the bow to, you know, for guys that have arrows that are able to come in. I mean, people say that, yeah, you have to shoot a certain spine arrow with this poundage of bow and your draw length and everything. And you do. But being able to tune that bow is different. Mm-hmm. And we really, I guess, shorten that time span to be able to do it and do it effectively so it stays.
Mm-hmm.
And efficiently.
And efficiently, exactly. Yep. The set technology, it was definitely a game changer in the industry. So, but yeah, I mean, those two bows, last year I had probably I'll probably never have another year like it. With the Encore, the bow shot.
Ryan shaking his head no.
Yeah. No.
The phenomenal.
Not a chance. Yeah. Not a chance.
Yeah. It was, I don't know. It
just
was
tipping shit over.
Yeah. Yeah.
People's hunts usually last 5-6 days, a month. You know, he was, every time we went out, it was first night. Oh, booner.
Yeah.
Oh, well, day no, two. There's another one.
A lot of that's gonna, luck. I mean, but I mean,
Larry was on fire.
A lot of years of that not happening, so sometimes you just got to work right. that way, you know?
Yeah, so I'm a little nervous about this year. you know, going and
knocking out,
to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, it's a great company. I'm glad to see the momentum, you know, picking up and everything, because honestly, we're, you know, the outdoor group as a whole. And if people aren't familiar with the outdoor group, Slick Trick Broadheads, Scott Releases, Winner's Choice Bowstrings, Elite Archery, of course, CBE Sights. But we've got a lot of products out there where the people behind building those products, they give a shit about the people that are going to be shooting them.
Yeah, right. That goes a long way.
You know, so they're ultimately,
they're passionate about it.
Exactly. And that's, and it just shows, in my opinion.
And that's the people you want making your bows, too.
Exactly.
Right.
So we're all shooting. I'm shooting the Remedy. Eric, you got the Encore.
Yep.
Chandler shooting the Remedy, and Ross is shooting the Encore.
Encore, yep.
But Doug is the oddball in the group.
Yeah, I'm shooting the Result 36.
Yeah, boy.
And Sour Apple.
Yep. I'll tell you right now, man, it is sharp. And that's another thing. That
it screams sharp.
Yeah. Dude, it's WCB green is what it is.
It's slick. Mm-hmm. Slicker than jet.
Well, I'm telling you right now, that's the other piece of the company that certain, you know, the archery industry is built of not only hunters, but target archers as well. And we have an awesome staff. Darren Christianberry, I mean.
The best.
That's where it all started for us with Elite.
You know what? You're right.
That's where it all started.
I think I had just bought one, and then I was like learning who he was, and he was at the Bone Shed in Ottawa
for an event.
And we podcasted there with him early on. Like, we had maybe 30 episodes in.
Yep.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, been a big Darren Christianberry fan since.
Yep.
I'll tell you, Darren is, he's a close friend of
top notch
of mine, top notch guy, Nathan Brooks. I mean, we have a lot of knowledge and
a podcast fun fact out there for our listeners.
Yep.
And I got to get a hold of Nathan and redo this. That's the only podcast we've ever recorded and then had something fuck up and then not been able to air the show.
Really?
He's the only one we've ever had that happen. Now it'll happen to this episode. But seriously, we recorded it. It was an amazing episode. He was pumped. We were pumped. And I don't know. I don't remember exactly what happened. It's been a few years. The audio didn't record.
Really?
It was showing that I was recording. Everything was checking out. But when I go through, you can barely hear him. It's not there.
I can tell you.
I don't think he was there at all. You could hear us.
But not him.
But then when he would go to talk,
dead
silence.
But everything on the software and the computer was checking out.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Some switch wasn't on or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel terrible to this day about it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Nathan's one of those guys. He's very in-depth archery. Just thinks archery all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Smart. Along with Darren, them two together we've been in several events filming them and stuff and just learned so much from just listening to them talk to one another.
Oh, I can imagine.
When those guys are around, you just sit back and listen.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. It's just from as far as setting bows up and everything. So that just, you know, our team of pro archers are second to none.
Mm-hmm.
Just number one, great people, great individuals,
and
good shooters as well. And all of them are open to help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that we do say, even at Respect the Game, you know, I tell people all the time, message us. If you've got a question about something, whether it be, you know, you're setting up your farm, whether this is going to be good, whether this, whatever, this
or works, something with your bow.
Yeah. Or something with your bow. It don't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Message us. You will get an answer.
Okay. Let's talk about, can I use this as a segue to talk about another brand?
Hey, this is your podcast. You can do whatever you want.
I want to showcase the people, but you are right. We can really do whatever we want. To be honest.
Some of the stories we can go into, but we won't do that.
Oh, easy.
So
yeah,
talking about people messaging you guys and just talk about different brands. You guys mentioned Slick Trick earlier, which is another, we're very proud to have that as a partner as well for the podcast. And we've shot Slick Tricks for years now.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 or 4 years going on for me.
I would say 4 probably.
I've shot the hell out of the Raptor Tricks, which is the expandable Viper Tricks. We talked about them at the podcast we did at the Iowa Classic. But I think people, and we talked about this a little bit at our green room.
The green room,
yeah. People basically expecting things that are unrealistic for an expandable or mechanical head, whatever terminology you use. Is that a common thing? Like, you're getting a lot of these messages, Ryan, right, through social?
Yeah. If you ever get a message back on most of the social platforms for the TOG, that's most of the time you're talking to me or Larry.
Yeah.
And it is
mind blowing.
Yeah. It's disappointing sometimes.
I'm sure there's a lot of positive, like,
probably. There is. There's a lot of positive, but
broadheads are a controversy anyway, yes, right?
And they are. It's nonstop.
It's like positive, but.
Yes. Sorry.
You're right.
Ryan is choking.
Yeah, COVID.
Sorry, hacking on a bone.
Hacking on a bone. He'd be all right.
But yeah, we get a lot of social questions or comments, especially of people telling us success stories with their broadheads, especially the Raptor Trick, because it is expandable.
Yeah.
That the deer ran 40 yards. Awesome blood trail. They watched him fall from the tree, killed the biggest buck of their life. Super excited about it. But the blade bent. I can't reuse this broadhead. So the broadhead is, I will no longer buy a slick trick as I hunt. And it just doesn't.
Because it did its job?
Yeah. I don't understand how to.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of my point. I'm like, dead is dead.
Yeah. Right, you know? I mean, you put that, you put the meat in your freezer, you put the buck on the wall. Everything you prepared for throughout the season worked exactly how you wanted it to. But you can't reuse that broadhead for next year.
But the blade got a clean passer and hit a rock. And what do I do about that, Ryan?
Yes. I'm sorry. Just
so what they're saying is, like, they're out there to reuse that broadhead. They're not out there to kill a deer.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
That's what they're saying.
Yep. Well, and in most cases, I mean, that's how I look at it. And obviously, it's not. I understand, hey, it may be $40 a pack of broadheads. Totally get it. But you know what? If you want a reusable broadhead, one that you can use over and again, the safest bet is to probably buy a fixed blade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Slick Trick sells replaceable blades. A lot of other broadheads, there's a lot of good broadheads out there as well. And I'm sure they get the same complaints over as well.
I'm sure they all do.
Because here's the thing, and I'll tell you this, you know, too. I'm a broadhead geek. And, I mean, I go through, I've got different consistencies of ballistic gel. That we've shot through, we've done through a lot of different
broadheads. That'd be fun.
Through a lot of different broadheads. And I can tell you this much, an expandable, they're really not made to reuse over and over again. They sell replaceable blades for them, but, you know, there's companies out there that have replaceable blades, but then you got to rely on you putting them in there correctly. If you over-torque a screw.
Again, where you just said each product has 40 hands in one product, now you got one guy trying to fix it.
Who doesn't know what a torque wrench for your broadhead.
Yeah. Right. So my point is, so then if you replace the blades and you do something incorrectly and it does not function like you want, now guess whose fault it is? It's the broadhead's fault.
Back to the company.
So I'm, you know, you, I'm looking at it like this. If I go out there and I successfully harvest and kill an animal, and I punch through both lungs, and that animal goes 40 yards and falls over, I'm going to be happy as hell.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, last thing I'm going to try to do is blame the broadhead because I can't reuse it. You know, I don't care if it's a doe. If whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be.
The last thing you care about is the broadhead.
Your broadhead, at that point, is a soldier to do a job.
Yeah.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Like, and then it's like, sometimes there's another one lost.
Well, let me throw this at you real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever shot a deer with a gun?
A few, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever went down and got your bullet, picked it back up, and put it back in?
You know, solid point. No. Yeah. Exactly. I take an L on the bullet.
Out there with a metal detector.
I've got it in a deer before, and now it's sitting on my little desk.
Yeah. Did you reshoot it?
No, I haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
Maybe you were shooting like musket balls back in the day. And they were a motherfucker because you had to make it. Yeah.
It is made of lead, so it's just a mangled up mess anyway. Yeah.
Is that a musket?
I'm going to melt this down and reuse it.
Well, I'm saving money.
I didn't get it packed out all the way.
Have you seen Malibu's Most Wanted?
Yeah.
That dude, Buzz, he's like, man, is that a fucking musket? And he pulls it out. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's a great movie. But it's a good point, and it is. I'm not concerned about that. Half the time I would retire my arrow anyway.
Yeah.
Not, maybe not my arrow, but I'm like, I'll just get a new one. I like the feeling of a fresh broadhead every time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe yeah. I'm just, but I know what I'm doing. Like, I know, I don't buy a 3-pack of Raptor Trick and go, this better last me through 12
the rest
deer.
Of my life.
Yeah. Right. You know what I mean?
For sure.
I don't get it. I don't get why that's
I'm not expecting to reuse. If I shoot a deer with that broadhead, I'm not expecting to reuse it.
Right. Well, me either. And I just, you know, regardless of whether you think, hey, I can reuse this head to kill 6 deer with, most likely if you've got 2 inches, an inch on each side of, you know, metal out each side, it's more prone to bend. A fixed blade's more solid in construction.
Right.
You know, it's not, there's no movable parts.
And honestly, I'm not taking that chance of reusing that head on a 180
inch
deer.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Or 125 inch deer. I'm not taking that chance.
You don't have to open or something.
Can I ask you guys something?
Sure.
When you get up to the tree and you get in your stand, you get your bow up and on the hook, whatever, and you go to grab your arrow to knock an arrow, and come on, tell me I'm not the only dude who does this. You look at your quiver full and you'll go, and you pick, you're the one today.
Every time.
Do you guys do that?
I'll tell you what I do. It's funny because I've got a pet peeve, and people are creatures of habits. And, you know, and I'll get into this a little bit later. And I even talk about this in some of the seminars I've done when it calls being versatile and stuff as a hunter, because people are creatures of habits.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hard habits to break. One habit that I have is whenever I get up there, you mentioned looking in your quiver, the arrow that I'm going to shoot, I always put in the same slot before I go out.
Okay.
So I know when I get in the tree, that's the arrow I grab first, and I put it in.
Yeah.
And Ryan's probably thinking, okay, that's why I've seen him grab mm-hmm. one, then I put it back in the quiver, and mm-hmm. then I put another one back in.
Yeah.
Because I grabbed the wrong arrow, and I it's because it's not the arrow that I intended to grab.
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I'll always shoot that first one, but then if it's not happening, I'm like, okay, maybe it's the arrow's fault, so I'll switch.
After like 3-4 days of hunting, you're like,
okay, dude, when I get in the stand, I'm like, well, I haven't seen a deer with this arrow, so I'm going to try another
switch
one.
It up.
Every time I'm like, all right, you got 3-4 hunts in.
So yes, everyone here does it. You're not the only one.
I just didn't know, because I do it every time. I'm like, all right, like, give your bro a shot.
Yeah, you're getting benched.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like they're talking.
Yeah.
I've even done it. The thing where I'm like, okay, that one has a lighted knock, but this one doesn't. I'm going with that one.
Mm-hmm.
See, I if I'm shooting lighted knock, I shoot all lighted knocks because of the weight. So I'm paranoid about that, you know?
Yeah,
but
no doubt.
But I might have the same brand lighted knocks, but different colors.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay, we went blue last time. We're going green. Green's the color for the day.
I always put my best flying arrow right in the middle of like my 5-arrow quiver.
Mm-hmm.
So I have something to hang it on. I have that gap in between all the arrows, so I can hang it on a branch if I need to.
Yeah.
But I always put that best flying one right in the middle, so I know. And then I just work my way out.
Filter out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Funny. I'm glad I'm not alone.
If I get to the end, something's wrong.
Yeah.
I get to the outside.
Good day or really bad day.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
But I kind of do that with a lot of my, not that I'm like super superstitious or anything like that, but I kind of, with archery equipment, I feel like you have such a mental attachment to certain things that like, mm-hmm. I feel a little bit like my bow has like a, like, it's like we're boys.
But it not even comes with the bow. Like I'll listen to like certain songs on the way to the stand and it's a whole.
Dude, I'm telling you, people are creatures of habit.
They are.
You know, the thing is we've had people talk to us a lot. They're like, man, I've getting pictures of this big deer, and I've listened to, you know, a lot of the guys you've had on podcasts and stuff before, and hearing it, and it's really repetitive too from the stuff that they've heard as well. As far as you have somebody sitting in a stand and they're like, I'm getting pictures of the deer, my camera is 80 yards down the field, and I'm seeing my shooter deer, my target deer, at 150 yards for 4 nights.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to move. I'm just going to sit right here because maybe, just maybe,
mm-hmm.
he's going to walk right by me.
Yeah.
Hey, guess what?
You know what?
He ain't coming.
He ain't.
I'm just saying, you know, you got to take advantage of a lot of those opportunities. As long as you're careful and you know the property, that's where a lot of that intel, and I know, you know, pays off, because mm-hmm. you learn how the deer are utilizing the property, know what you can get away with, know whether I got to set off this trail and maybe I need to pull that deer an extra 20 yards with a call or whatever. decoy, whatever the case. I mean, a lot of people assess a decoy, you know, they think decoy. And I see this deer with his ear pinned back, you know, walking sideways. Sometimes you have to use that decoy to your advantage to put the deer where you want them. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily to come in and be aggressive, but put the deer down that way so the deer are going to be focused on that, on the decoy.
Right, and get curious.
Exactly, and get curious to pull them that direction and just give them just the amount of yardage you need to put an arrow through them.
Absolutely.
Is that something you use a lot, decoys, in your guys' tactics?
Oh, I'm telling you right now, yeah, I use a lot of decoys. I mean, a lot of people are like, you know, I've never had a mature deer come into the decoy, and it can be tough. It's very there's a level of commitment to using a decoy as well. And I've learned a lot of what not to do over the years because I've screwed up.
Yeah.
And
that being said, with all that, like, you know, you have the experience, you know how to basically set a decoy correctly. And I don't imagine there's a science to hunting the wind on a decoy and all that. What percentage? Well, that's kind of, I don't know if you can really even answer that question because I know how hunting works. I was going to ask you, what percentage do you feel like you're successful when you use decoys? But I guess it'd be...
How many times have you killed over a decoy?
Yeah,
I
don't know if that question works because I just understand how hunting is because you don't kill one every time. So you could be like, well,
I've killed a lot of deer over a decoy, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them, if it's the right time of year, you get that right buck that's in the right frame of mind,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's going to approach it aggressively.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that myth, I can tell you this much right now. When people say deer will approach a decoy from the to the head, you know, and all that stuff all the time, that's full of shit. They're full of shit. I'm just saying, I've got plenty of video to back that up. And so...
You mean Ryan does?
Yeah.
I mean Ryan. Damn.
Ryan does too. But the reason why I say that is because they will approach it from the head, but they will also approach it from the ass. They will...
What's up, Doug?
Yeah.
What's up? Thanks, Ryan. Brian's the one that actually audibly laughed at my joke.
No comment.
Thank you for that. Yeah. I'm glad he's here.
That was a good one.
Hey, screw you, Eric.
It just depends.
I was laughing, you asshole.
Oh, yeah. I heard his laugh a little loud. So.
And my point saying that is because a lot of times it just depends on the deer's attitude.
Yeah.
And if a deer is really submissive, a lot of times where they just want to check that deer out to basically see what deer it is, they will approach from behind and they're going to stick their nose out just like a dog. A dog runs mm-hmm. up to another dog's ass and sniffs it.
Mm-hmm.
So a deer is no different. They'll circle around to the butt. And if a deer is really aggressive where it's like, all right, I don't care what deer you are, I'm whooping your butt.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. they're going to be all postured up. They're going to come around. They may go to his head. They may go to his butt, but they're not always going to go to his head.
One of the key
tips that I can say is visibility. Make sure, you know, it's not like right over a hill.
Where they can see
mm-hmm. and size that decoy up for a while and leave a little bit of space to where they can get all the way around him.
Interesting. I don't have a good, like, I'm using buck decoys typically.
Typically.
I have a doe decoy, but I don't have a good buck decoy. Of course, the decoy that gets the DSD, right? That's like the cream of the crop.
It is the most realistic, and we've had deer that aren't necessarily interested in fighting just come out and feed right next to it. I mean, I can't say that 100% of the time that, you know, there's not going to be a deer, you know, perk his ears up and stomp a couple times or whatever if they do, but not enough to where... It's a lot worse than nothing being there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
See, I've dabbled in it a couple times, but I'm like, I feel like I'm out there for an hour. Like,
it's a pain in the ass.
Like, position right? him one way, and then you get in the tree, and like, okay, that's
ridiculous.
That's,
hey, if you guys saw the raw footage of him setting his decoy out for the Kansas hunt that he killed one over with, it's like, put it here. Hey, stop. Sit back. Okay, hold on. He just shifted over about 2 or 3 yards, and he'd be puffing pure whitetail all over the place. And he's like, shifted over a little bit more. But, I mean, when that buck come out, I mean, he had it perfect by the time he got it. I mean, that buck come out 100 yards away, make it a scrape, saw that that buck wasn't, it was still posturing.
Is that
up,
the footage from your TikTok?
Yep,
where
yep,
it's like balled up.
Yep, that DSD. And he come around.
It's a thick circle, boy.
Got the, yeah, got the wind.
He's thick, boy. He's thick.
I mean, he's
a thick boy.
A thick boy.
Yep. See, that is cool when they do that. I need to invest in a good decoy. I just like what Eric said. I don't know enough about it. I don't know how much I would actually use it. I feel like it sounds cool, and I would love to have like the encounter and watch the interaction. But when it comes,
especially
to
when
like,
they're sidestepping like that,
if you guys had the, I had all the footage from like Phillips, all his hunts, and I mean when he's in Kansas, he has a decoy. He's there for 60 days, and he has a decoy out 57 of those
that
days.
That guy is a decoy freak.
And I mean, mm-hmm. to see the footage of how those deer react to that decoy, it will calm all of your worries about ever using a decoy.
Really?
I mean, I don't know how many times there'll be 20 does out there feeding next to that deer decoy. And then he'll have that one buck that enters in to check all them does, and he's reared up, and he'll come in and do what Phillip does. He'll pass him because it's good footage.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and then
right.
he'll wait for that big one to come in. But I mean, he gets it done with that decoy.
And I'll tell you right now, and you're right, Phillip is the decoy king. I've learned so much over the years from Phillip Vanderpool as far as for decoying deer, just set up, and because there was some stuff that I was doing wrong, and he was like, well, maybe try this. And you try it and it works. I'm like, oh God,
son of all back.
Now you got Tommy Trey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you don't want to tell me.
He's like, oh, boy.
I told you, man.
That boy, it worked for me. It worked for 1972. It worked for me.
He had a blow up deer on
I'll tell you, he's a wealth of knowledge in the whitetail woods. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah. How could he not be? You know, with all the time he's got in.
Yeah.
The last decoying experience I've had is when we went to South Dakota. And had remember we got that it was like a target. It was a flat target you could like position. No, it was a decoy. It was like this wide, like a couple inches wide foam, and like the head turned and it worked. I mean, we got shots on
sit there and swivel.
But it was so windy and we couldn't get it far enough in the ground. The ground was so hard that at one point it's just like shoop.
It's out there like discoing out there.
Yeah.
I think
it's like,
possessed.
Get down on it.
It's like the exorcism. Yeah.
But it actually, a little bit of movement that it had at certain points from the wind paid off for us. But
then there's this guy out there, and we've seen the decoys. We're like, oh, shit, there's a bunch of antelope out there.
No.
And this guy had full-mounted taxidermied antelope out in the field.
On a game cart. They wheel out there. And
oh, man.
Commitment.
I mean, he would sit there and put them all together and set them out there. It was commitment.
It was bizarre. So what hunts you guys got coming up this fall, talking about all sorts of critters?
Well, you know, for honestly, man, I'll tell you what, we all pretty much crap the bed when it comes to drawing tags this year.
Yeah. That's the way it goes sometimes, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's just the way it goes.
But that's the start of your, from last season being so sweet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's why I know. So my worry just got worse. I was like, oh crap. But we have I drew an antelope tag in Montana. So we're probably gonna start off there, I'd say, and then go right back to Nebraska where Eric and Doug smashed some mule deer here a couple years back. And so we're gonna start off there. I drew a Kansas tag
and missed some.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe I should say where Eric missed one at 20 yards.
A monster.
There it is.
Sorry,
yeah.
Eric.
Yeah, hey, I done fucked up, okay?
Yeah, it was so funny because he texted me and he's like, I missed one. I was like, how far? He goes, I'm going to the pub.
You will find me in a bar stool.
That's a bad one when you're immediately going to the pub.
Oh, yeah.
He came in full camo still.
At the bar?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You show up just getting
the guy
drink.
Was like, you want to go back to the house? I'm like, I knew these guys were already at the tavern. I'm like, nope. Drop me off at the front door.
Yeah, we already tagged out partying.
Yeah, Corey was like, I'll drop you off at the back.
Yeah, he goes, I'll drop you off at the back door.
You got to walk by the freezers when you go in there. Like, all the food.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, that's a hunt, though, isn't it? That's
so fun.
It is. It is a
fun. That was awesome.
I mean, the mule deer was an extra. I mean, we had so much
fun. Yeah, I didn't have to kill anything. That was so fun. But
I don't want to. I'm not trying to bring up bad memories here, but how big was the mule you missed?
It's on video.
Yeah.
It was on
Respect the Game.
It's on Respect the Game.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Hey, and the Virtue.
Eric missed, we're airing it.
Yeah. It was
on national. That was like on the trailer, the preview.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Philip making fun of him.
Hey, Eric, listen, not many people can say it. Their first time they missed a mule deer aired on national TV.
That's right.
I'll give you some credit, though. It was pretty dang windy that day.
Oh, man. It was.
I wouldn't know.
I remember looking back at the footage, and it was low.
I remember watching the footage, but I don't even remember the deer. I remember focusing on like what happened with your arrow when we watched it. But
I mean, even in the video, it was tough to see them because they were laying down in like 4 foot tall grass. So
yeah, it was rough. I mean, people think 20 yards it's chip shot. It's not always the case.
You're in the plains with 45 mile an hour winds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally. Not only the plains, but you have those hills. Like you said, the grass is tall. You know, and confidence is key, you know, and knowing that your arrow is going to pass through everything is key. And I mean, I'm sure everything, all that stuff, and all you can see is a very small target at that point.
Yep.
You know, his head sticking up, but knowing exactly where to shoot. So it happens.
Oh yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll give you credit though. I mean, you smoked that second one.
Oh yeah.
throwing yuccas at him and everything. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I threw a battle axe through that
thing. You sure
battle
did.
Battle axe.
It's like throwing an axe through
it. Mm-hmm. I can tell you this. I'm super pumped up to, we were talking earlier over in the green room about trying to get a hunt together for RTG again.
Yeah, yeah.
And film that, man. We're going to get something together. So hopefully on a future RTG episode, we're going to have the WCBQ crew.
I'll cut the chops again for you.
You better let us all go down to Dumas Walker.
I'll just bring the mustache.
Yeah.
It's classic,
yeah.
Doug.
Yeah. I know. I don't have a song for that, so I'm sorry.
Don't need one. It speaks for itself.
He's like, mustache speaks for itself.
Here's a song. It's on groove, man. Yeah. It's got its own late night show.
Yeah.
You need like a little mustache comb that you just... Whoosh,
so I know I just want to reach over and comb it because I'm actually sitting next to him right now. I'm like,
voted for a mustache cam on this podcast.
You did. You brought that up.
We'll get a mustache cam.
We'll have to gavel.
Feels awkward.
Just in tight on your mouth.
On my mouth the whole time.
An hour long footage.
It's just him like talking, but then like.
Anytime you breathe, it's just.
Yeah.
It's like Ned Flanders over there.
Yeah, right.
Well, where are you heading after Nebraska?
Nebraska? Where are we headed after Nebraska?
You're going to South Dakota. I'm going to try to kill a deer at home.
Yep. Ryan's going to be filming Josh and trying to kill a deer at home with Josh, of course, here in Missouri, or back home in Missouri, I guess. And then Paul and I are going to South Dakota.
For what?
Deer. We're going to chase deer in South Dakota this year.
Muleys or whitetails or...
Probably whitetails, I would say.
So East River somewhere?
Yep, East River area, and Aberdeen area. Supposed to be a good place. We're going to go up there a couple of days early, scout, see if we can see, and go hang and hunt, you know.
Very cool.
Get after it. So I'm anxious to get out with old Bigsy, too. You know, we haven't been in the woods together in a while. So
We haven't seen that cat in a while.
Yeah. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
I mean, we see him at ATA every year is typically where we get to catch up with him.
Yeah.
And yeah. Last time I seen him, he had a ponytail.
It's reckless.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's
here
reckless.
We go.
That's reckless.
Good thing I wore my boots tonight.
Get the boots out.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
Shit's getting deep.
Oh, heck.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, bless his heart.
What's up, Paul?
Old Bigsy, yeah. I'll tell you what, old Bigsy's an elk hunter, though, from way back.
That's what the first podcast we did with Paul was all about, I think, Colorado?
Probably New Mexico or Arizona, man. He's killed some giant bulls.
It's been years since we've done that podcast.
Yeah, he goes down there with Buckhorn Outfitters, and I'll tell you, they've got the bulls, and you know, Paul's gotten, he's fared off pretty well. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's killed some giant bulls. And
what's your guys' favorite thing to chase? I mean, for you guys personally,
man, we just like to go have a good time. I love chasing bugling bulls. There's no doubt. Love calling bulls in. There's nothing about it. But honestly, you know, I love spotting something mule deer. There's nothing I don't like about any of it. To be honest with you, I love the decoy antelope. But there's just something about being able to, you know, put your cameras out on your home property and, you know, create that history with that, with the deer you have there, and then actually go out, you know, be able, unfortunately, we haven't been able to do a whole lot of that because we've been on the road so much, or working, whether it be up to the factory quite a bit. So we, you know, a lot of people think that when we film episodes for Respect the Game, we're, you know, we just go out there
and party.
Yeah, and party and hang a stand and kill a deer.
I thought that's what you guys did. I don't.
Yeah. No, not
far from. I remember.
There's, I mean, we're a crew that, you know, we're not 3 o'clock hunters by any means. We're going to go, if it doesn't make sense to go hunt that evening, we're going to go scout. We're going to go find a deer. We're going to go hang a set. We're going to go try to get on.
This is why you guys are successful and it works,
you know,
out.
That's just the way we are. You know, we're hunters and, you know, we love to learn from everybody else as well. I mean, we're just fortunate to have people, you know, we document our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're no better hunters than really anybody out there. It's just a matter of we document it.
Mm-hmm. You're telling your story.
So, yeah. I mean, and we love to hear everybody else's stories as well. So, and, you know, send us messages or questions or let us know. Send us a picture because I guarantee you're going to get a response. Dude, tell us a story about that because...
Or if you, see Larry, if you see Larry Mack at a trade show, go talk to him because he'll talk to
anyone. You got
to
talk to him.
Yeah, I will talk to him about cocaine, country dancing.
We need to get the rights to that song.
We need to call that guy.
He's like, yeah. Hey, listen, man. We just want to use your song sometimes on the podcast.
Yeah. But no, in all seriousness, you know, we're passionate about it. And we just, you know, we'll try to share whatever we know. And we'll definitely listen to whatever you know, and hopefully we can learn from each other. That's how we look at it. We're all hunters, you know. I mean, crap, we're deer hunters, you know.
If that's what it's about, you know.
Yeah, we can eat our backstrap and some ground burger or whatever, you know, dude, and drink a couple cold ones.
That's what it's all about. Hunting camp, man, that's like we talk about a lot, is the podcast is like a beautiful thing because it's kind of a cool way. And kind of like what you said earlier, Larry, it's like, do what you already been doing, but market it for everyone to see.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of what this podcast is, you know, it's like, maybe we wouldn't get together as frequently as this, but this keeps like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like,
we get together at hunt camp every week.
Yeah. And we get to talk with people we're friends with or look up to or can learn from or whatever it may be. And then it's just kind of a beautiful thing. And then what I like about it, the goal really with the podcast, when we get messages, is there's a lot of people that don't have anything like this. I don't have buddies that they can talk to about it. So if we can be like their, I don't know if artificial replacement for their hunting camp is a way, but maybe not artificial. Maybe it's, I don't know. That's a good way to put it, but I kind of their replacement for what they don't have in a hunting camp.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And because, you know, one thing I've learned through the industry too, going to trade shows and even talking, I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing, is when you're talking to folks, you know, everybody's piece of property, if you own a piece of property in Iowa versus North Carolina, right? Probably different caliber of deer, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, hunting shows, in my opinion, although we have one, they kind of leave a lot of false expectations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
When it's really not intended to. You know, bottom line is this. Is if you can go out and you're getting pictures of the biggest deer on your farm that you have pictures of, and you can successfully go out, game plan, and harvest that deer and kill him.
Do it.
Do it.
100%.
You know, do it. Make it happen. Because that right there is a success story.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's a success story. That's how you learn to, number one, you're learning what the deer are doing on your property. You're going to learn something every single year, a little bit different.
Every time you're out.
Yep.
You can learn something different.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just break it down to the details. When you think you're detailed enough, look into the next detail. How is the deer, you know, the deer is coming to this field.
Detail your details.
That's right. Pretty much. You're exactly right. Because what happens is this. People say, I'm seeing deer out in this field every night in September, right? Most likely, it's a bean field.
Yep.
Okay.
Because you can't see through corn.
Okay. Well, but they're not.
Nice.
You can't see through corn.
Pro tip.
What do you mean you can't see through corn? I can't see through corn. What does that even mean?
Oh, you can't? Yeah, what does that even mean?
So if they're out in that field there, now break it down. Which way is the wind blowing that night? How did you see them enter that field? And then break it down again. Okay, the next night you go out there, you see the deer again. But they're in a different section. Did the wind shift?
What changed? Yeah.
Exactly. What changed? Why are they on this side of the field versus that side of the field? Now you're starting to put together, formulate the details of where you need to set up on what wind to be successful, you know, versus just saying those deer are in that field.
I think that's a big shift for me personally, and like the caliber of deer that I would see, like going from seeing a couple good bucks to like seeing, I mean, I can consistently see bucks if I, like pressure goes into that. But we doing podcasts really, I'm like, became ultra aware of like details like that. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's so easy to just
overlook it.
Yeah. Overlook it to the point of, oh, that big buck's in that field. I'm going to hunt that field every night, no matter what, until I see that deer, where they think like the more they're there, the better, which no, more, not always.
The more harm you could be doing if you're there every night.
Yeah. Right. But I think that changes a lot for people when they break down the details that way. Like you said, is like, look at the basically weather data. Yep. And that might help you understand, like, I try my best to do that now when I get a trail cam picture of a buck, like go to like WeatherBug and go to like Weather History or whatever app, what do you use, and be like, okay, that deer's moving on a southeast wind. Okay, southeast wind. Where is he coming from and going at the wind to his face on a southeast wind? Why is he there? And then you try to basically like backwards engineer why he's in that spot, pretty much, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, you're 100% correct. The thing is, too, is go to the dollar store, Dollar General, and pick you up a cheap calendar. When you wake up in the morning, look at WeatherBug or whatever weather, and look at your hourly, and watch how the pattern of the wind direction is. If it changes at 3 o'clock and you know the deer are hitting that field in the evenings, write down that wind direction on that date. When you go check your trail cameras, if you don't have a cell camera, you know, go back, look at the date on that camera. That way you can correlate some sort of pattern to how that deer's entering the field. And it's going to tell you how you need to hunt that field.
Yeah, that's a good tip, the Dollar General calendar. I'm writing that down, actually.
I actually use Weather Underground, and if you're on a desktop, you can go back to any date, and it'll print you out 3 pages of the weather in your area that night.
Yeah.
It works pretty awesome.
Really?
Yeah, and it'll teach you a lot about your property, and which is most important. More important, actually, than going out and harvesting deer that particular time. Because the more you know about your property, the more successful you'll be able to hunt in the future. Mm-hmm. So being able to document that stuff, I have notebooks literally of going out glassing deer from back in the day. I don't have near the time I wish I had to go do it now, because I really enjoyed doing that, just to try to pattern what deer. And you'll start to see a pattern based upon year after year, too, on how the deer enter those fields.
Yeah.
On that piece of property with what wind and all the surrounding properties and everything. It really teach you kind of how you need to navigate your property. Because there's spots that look great on aerial. It's like, man, we need to hang a set there. But that may be a great set in the rut, but it's not a good set in December or in October 1st or September 15th, whenever your season opens.
Yeah. Or you get in there, it's just thicker than shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Do you see a lot of, like, you know, keeping the, by the way, that's really cool. I think one day when you're old and decrepit and if you still have those, that's going to be really cool.
I've literally have notebooks, like old, like binders, you know, the old notepads, you know, with the
old typewriter binders. Notes from you were a youngster.
I'm dead serious. Yeah. Me and my stepbrother, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Ty Easley. Yeah, we were notorious about, he would go to one field, I would go to another, and we would kind of compare notes.
That's awesome.
And look at that, you know, how the deer were entering the fields and so on and so forth. And
that's something that your kids will find really cool too, like later on.
Yeah, like them. I've got them right in my desk, and I was actually, whenever Ryan was telling me, because him and Josh had been getting some pictures of some really good deer and moving cameras around, and so it made me think about some of them. I actually pulled one out, was looking at some of them, and it brought back a lot of really cool memories about, you know, some of the deer that we've taken over the years and seeing them and
It's like a baby book for your deer.
In August, and we killed them in November and stuff.
Yeah,
that's the other thing too. The rear key point, because there's different phases of the season where I'm sure this will relate to a lot of hunters out there where they're seeing these deer in the summertime here, then they disappear and they may show back up in December. You know, if they make it through gun season and everything else.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was going to ask you earlier. If you see a lot of deer within your notes, like. Show up for a pocket of maybe 10 days during like late October, then you don't see them again for a while.
Absolutely, we do. Yeah, there's some deer that will stick around. Some deer will move, you know, because they're out, you know, cruising, looking for does or moving to another piece of property. And then later season, they show back up. A lot of that, what I've seen happen is depending on the crop cycle, that's, you know, if they're the food cycle pretty much, what they have there for food to eat. Because, you know, deer need food, cover, and water. That's the three key components. And being able to make sure that whether it's corn 1 year, beans 1 year, and if you have a bigger piece of property that has both corn and beans, knowing if they're going to alternate year to year, you know, that's where that information is really going to become valuable to you, because those years when they do alternate, you'll have a head start on what the deer are doing. Deer will follow that pattern. I mean, year to year, it's amazing how we compared year to year, what the deer do, and how, I mean, literally within a day or two of the date on the calendar.
That's crazy.
You see that it's...
Just by crop rotation. Yes,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's, you know, there's a lot to be learned there. So that, you know, going back to details of the details, that's literally a legit statement.
Your homework.
Yep.
That's a, you know, I was kind of like, man, that's cool. That'd be cool to have. And then meanwhile, I'm literally, I take
notes on every podcast.
No, it's on every, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm making my own logs while I'm talking to people,
you know,
but and I don't know. That's just, that'll be neat. I should keep these
and
keep track of them.
Yeah. And literally, I mean, there's,
hey guys, we interrupt this podcast to bring you an advertisement, but wait. Just listen, please.
We're sorry.
I know we hate commercials.
We hate them.
Hey, listen.
Just listen. You're here anyway.
This isn't a commercial. It's a recommendation.
It's a PSA.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
We care about your hearing.
That's right.
We do. We work blue-collar jobs, except for Doug. Hey, Doug.
I still care about your hearing, though.
We're going to use Eric as the poster boy for this segment real quick.
Let's do it.
Because Eric works in a race car shop, really. Yeah. That's the best way to explain it. And you're using... I mean, impact tools to grinding to welding to whatever.
Shit, CNC machines running all day long.
Not great for your hearing.
No, not. It's bad.
And listen, it's easy to not give a shit because I don't give a shit really a lot. But now I'm starting to care now that I have like a daughter with a really small voice.
Right.
And my wife has a really small voice. I'm always like, what?
What? Huh? What?
What? The point of this, Isotune Sport is now partnered with us, which we are thankful for, because if you're at work and you have to wear hearing protection, Isotunes has you covered there, and Bluetooth capable. So you can listen to your podcast while at work, while protecting your hearing. I've been using mine on the mower because I have a lot of grass to mow, and it's been amazing. I used it the other day while putting it in big time plots on the tractor.
Yep.
I was using the Isotune Sport Defy.
The earmuffs, right?
Yep. The earmuffs completely protect your hearing. You can hear your music good. It's not overpowering. It's not blowing out your eardrums through the music, and you can almost still hear, like, you can hear the machinery run. So it's like protecting your hearing. You still hear machinery. So you kind of have like a sense of your surroundings, and you can clearly hear music.
Right. And it's nice too with the earmuffs. That's what I was using last night to cut down a tree with a chainsaw. So like as soon as that chainsaw revs up, it quiets the noise, because I didn't have any music playing. So it quiets the noise. And then as soon as you let off, you can almost hear better. It like amplifies the noise around you.
And you can control all that. There's buttons on the side. Yep. You can just reach up and control, like, basically to your liking.
So you can still hear people talk if you don't have any background noise going.
Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome.
Or, you know, what you can do is you can act like you have music on, listen to people talk shit about you while you have them on.
That's right.
So
that's
right. There's that, too. Isotunesport.com. That's code... What did I say? I forget. My code's WCB10. Save yourself some money. Check them out. We're really proud to have them as a partner. Back to the show.
I'm, you know, I get blown away, too, by looking back at some of that, even farms that where I haven't had time to hunt, because maybe, or maybe I wasn't seeing a deer of the age structure that I thought was good, and then you go back and you check the cameras, like, damn, I should have freaking hunted here, dude, because we had a new buck show up or whatever. So, you know, a lot of people don't have the luxury of hunting a 200 acre or 400 acre piece of property. Yep. So you have to do the best with what you've got.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably 95% of the people.
Yeah.
I'm that person.
Yeah. So if it's a smaller tract of property, you've got to optimize the best scenarios, the best, you got to, you know, try to present yourself the best opportunity to be successful.
Yep.
And in order to do that, you have to know the property. So if you may have a property where the deer are somewhere a mile away, but in late October, November, you're starting to get more deer pictures. So that's when you know, and it's hard, so tough to do because you want to get in the woods and hunt. Right? You know what I mean? You want to get in the woods and hunt.
It's hard best to
thing to do. Yeah, the best thing to do is go hunt, but go hunt without your bow. Go hunt. Go find out where the deer are at.
You hunt with glass.
Yep. Go find whether you're driving or find where the deer are at, so you know, how the deer are moving, whether it be a creek, whether it be a ridge line, whether it be whatever they're it could be whatever. Yep. Find the food, drive around in the spring, see what fields are going to be what. Mm. Keep that mental note in your head.
Your binos are your best friend.
Exactly, and just know that'll give you an idea of when you need to be in the timber.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And who's there?
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of things I think just get overlooked, and then people get excited with social media stuff, and then it makes them do things they wouldn't normally do. Or
like they divert from their plan.
It divert from their plan, for sure. That's a good point. But yeah, because of like pressure to, and I don't know, it's not everybody, but I feel like a lot of people are probably influenced this, like, oh, I see so-and-so out, I need to go do it too. And,
right. Well, it's kind of like last year when that cold front hit in October and people were knocking them down really early. And
it's like what Greg
said. Like, I got to get out there.
That 230 something giant October 1
opening day, because he detailed his details, did his homework, he knew exactly where that buck was gonna be.
People see that and they're like, I gotta go now. Like,
right.
Well, that's something I always did. I made game plans, did my homework, and then what I would do is I would basically create my game plan in my head. Well, then this is where I fall, like where I'm weak. And my dad was my number one hunting buddy, I'd call him and be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. This deer's doing this, or I think this is doing this. And then it'd come in, he'd be at my house or whatever. We'd be talking, like, man, I don't know, I'm thinking about changing my plan. And he would always be like, no, stick with your game plan. Mm-hmm. You made that game plan because
you made it for a reason.
Because
you had the homework.
You had details to make the game plan. Now you're second guessing it. Don't second guess it. Stick with your game plan.
Yep.
And he's so right. That's, and half the time I would go with my last second sporadic, like, but what if?
Right.
And I don't know, that's just me being indecisive or not being 100% confident in my game plan, which
there's always the what if.
Always the what if. But
I mean,
you can't think of the what if.
Right.
That's right.
But I find that it's hard to sometimes stick with it too. But I feel a lot more confident now in like my deer hunting abilities or like my game plans.
Oh,
you know how to efficiently do your homework more, especially once you have kids and all that. You learn how to be efficient.
For sure. I mean, your time's always limited. So it's just that's. Break it down. Break it down. Okay, I've got this piece of the puzzle. Now, okay, let me go out here again. If the deer are showing up in this field again, now I'm going to break it down to the next level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which way is the wind blowing? Which way is this? And now you can start to develop a pattern to hopefully make you successful through the year. Another thing that I've used, a lot of people have asked questions, hunting over bean fields and stuff outside of early season and stuff. Bean fields are tricky because early season and summertime, you're going to get a ton of pictures over deer.
Yep.
And then if the farmer goes in and they're cutting beans, there's not a whole lot there for them to eat. So therefore, they're going to move somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times, based upon permission, where I've been successful is when those beans start to turn yellow, like that, the leaves, the deer usually start to generate and move off of them, whether it be onto acorns or another food source. I'll go in there with some sort of, usually a rye, something that's going to germinate fairly easy, green blend, sugar rush or any type of, broadleaf plant that's going to germinate easy, a rye with some rye mixed in. And I'll overseed that corner of the field when them beans turn yellow, because what happens is that seed will fall down underneath them beans. And then when they dry out, the leaves will fall on top of the seed. The farmer goes in and cuts. They're pushing that seed into the ground.
Yep.
And then once everything's cut, boom, now you got green growth.
Yep.
You got green growth coming up there. So there's something there for them. And a lot of times, I'm not going to say every time, but a lot of times that can really spark that one shooter deer to go into that location because he doesn't have to travel far.
And it's fresh.
He's familiar with it.
He can go right there and he'll feed in that corner, whether it be by your stand or put him in a place.
Interesting. You know, that's a pro tip, man.
That is a pro tip.
I mean, that's a...
I've never done that.
Yep. And I've been successful.
I've done it in corn just because I'm limited on like food plot. So I'll just go in between the corn rows and just start broadcasting it with something that germinates easily, you know.
Yep.
Usually it just comes up right between the rows.
But see, corn, when they cut corn, what happens? You know, every cornfield, you know, no farmer is going to get every kernel of corn.
Right.
So deer are out there feeding beans. I mean, they're cut down to the dirt.
So I hope your farmer has a gleaner.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Right.
Nothing but gold.
Yeah.
Gold rain out the back.
So
it's like golden shower.
They just break down two rows in, get the whole field left.
Yeah. So I tried it one year, you know, poor man's food plot, pretty much, was just, I went and got some just rye grass, you know, just because I knew that it was going to get cold, wasn't going to mature. It was just going to get up to about that 3 to 4 inches tall, and deer will eat the living crap out of rye grass if you, you know, especially when it's that timber and it can well establish. But, and it's a, you know, it's a source for them just to go get that. You know, that type of food and it could just be an area where they're staging before they go to their master food source.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have to get them into that spot. And
Get that appetizer, you know?
Yeah.
Appetizer. Yeah. It's like a buffet.
Yeah.
It's like a buffet.
I like it. That's a good tip, man. I should probably try doing that, especially in areas that I can't like till up or do something like that. Mm-hmm.
That's most of my areas. What's up, Brian? I can't get in there.
Yep. Oh, I thought you were asking something.
You just care if I go to the bathroom?
Yeah, man.
Do it.
That's what I was wondering if you're getting that.
No, you got to hold that.
Should we take a pee break? I kind of got a pee, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
We can take a pee break.
You guys going in there together?
Might.
Sword fighting?
Pee fight?
Ooh.
Now, we'll keep rocking.
Don't break the rule.
Yeah, there's one rule at the studio, and you only find out the rule if you come here and read the sign.
That's right.
Yeah,
just don't do it.
Don't break it.
Don't ever do it.
Don't.
It's
one rule. You're never coming back.
You'll never come back.
Ever.
Did you see, be invited back.
Ever.
Did you see Judd's video today on the rules of the studio?
I haven't, no.
I don't even... It's just funny. I got my phone running a camera here. I don't know. I could probably do that. But anyway, basically the rules of the studio are it's a Crocs and Socks facility. I don't even know what it's... It was kind of like a...
I don't know where he comes up with half that shit.
Like
funny.
A flight attendant, like, these are the rules of the plane video.
Oh.
And it was just, if you break the rules in the studio, we're going to kick you in the head and then smother you in molasses and dress you up like Ted Nugent, put you out front for the locals to take care of you. It's completely random. It's like, okay.
Throw you in a zebra stripe Bronco.
Right. I know. That's why I was hoping you're going to bring your limo out and park it out front.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's in the shop.
Get the footprint gas pedal installed.
Exactly. What can you do?
I'm gonna take a whiz.
Big respect the game.
Yeah,
freaking
RTG limo.
So
I'll tell you one thing. I was gonna bring up too, Ross.
Yeah, I wish he was here.
How did, dude?
He's a working man,
Ross.
Old Ross. Hey, can we? Since nobody
dissed out on Larry Mack coming here,
he hadn't been around in a few weeks. Honestly, though,
he's been working
his
tail off.
Hey, since nobody's listening, can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
do you run the Ross Biggers Beard Instagram page?
Actually, I am not at liberty to say.
Oh, okay,
but no, I do run the Ross Bigger Beard Oil page.
Beard oil page.
Yeah,
that's a thing.
Yeah, well. It is. We're trying to grow it.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
Maybe we
don't. I haven't found this page yet.
Yeah. No, because we don't have a stash page yet.
Oh,
totally different. It's a totally different blend of oil.
Dude, you better make that right now, because as soon as this podcast airs, our listeners are going to make that.
Yeah, thing. I swear, if that page gets more followers than I have, I'll be pissed about it.
I bet you
better hurry up and crown that, Larry, on your way home tomorrow.
I will.
Because by the time this airs, you could already have that page made.
Oof. Talking about Ross, man. I love Ross. He's, you know, I had the pleasure of filming Ross. He went on a bear hunt with us years ago and filmed Ross.
Mm-hmm. That's Cree River, right?
Actually, that was one of them. We went to another camp in Saskatchewan where he killed his first bear. And I believe it was his first bear anyway. But we were in a tree together, and yeah, we had a heck of a time, and
yeah,
I got to film kill stud bear, and we just had a grand old time.
The footage of his Cree River bear is insane.
Yeah,
the
one where he's on the ground.
Yeah, especially when you realize that like you can't see in that footage that he is. Him and Jason basically got in between him and a sow.
Yeah.
You can't see that the sow is right behind them the whole time with cubs up in the tree, and they're pretty much sidestepping that bear the whole time.
Like, that's crazy.
You're either gonna go through us, or we're gonna get you before you get to them.
Yeah,
yeah. I tell Ross, something to see, man. It was awesome.
I tell him to pull up that footage every time we're at his man cave. You guys got to get out and see his man cave.
No doubt.
His 200 he shot last year is 202. He got it replicated, so the replica will actually be here at the studio eventually.
Oh, awesome, man.
So that'll be like when I was saying we don't have a lot of the deer heads hanging. It's going to be the Geyer Buck replica, which is the buck my dad shot. Yeah. And then Ross's 200 are going to be like the centerpieces, and we're going to hang everything basically.
Then my 200 from there. This year.
What's up? Hey, I hope you do
break out that orange.
Dude, that orange.
Yeah.
Eat the orange.
You want that orange, don't you?
Have we told the story of the whiskey bottle on the podcast yet?
I think we did.
We did the Mr. Boston's or whatever the hell it's called.
Mr. Boston, yeah.
Eric said, so for people who don't know.
So we had this old bottle in the studio that I found on this guy I worked for, his family farm. We'd always go out there when he needed some money and scrap some old farm equipment or something. And there's an old barn there. It's like, hey, go up in the hay mound. His mom had a little bit of a drinking problem, so she would hide booze.
Sweet
up there.
Lady,
he's like, go up there and just kick around. You might find a couple bottles. And I don't know how many we pulled out, 5 or 6 or something up there. But that one's special because it's old Mr. Boston, still sealed, and it's got 3 oranges in it from 1971.
Yeah.
And you can tell they're oranges, but they're fermented.
Yeah, they are definitely fermented.
I can't believe they did that. Like, has any other whiskey company ever done that? That's wild, right?
Like, put actual fruit in
it. Seems like a risky move.
I guess like the old Smoky does it in like their moonshine. You know, they got the cherries.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, but I mean, what are the chances of one of those being around?
I hope someday I get a witness Eric drink that.
Hey, there's 3 of them in there. You said.
Well, we did.
What you said, Doug, was if
what I said,
what you said was, if you kill a 200-incher, we're all eating one of them oranges.
Did I say that?
That's what you said.
I think so.
I better kill a 200. Everyone has to eat one except the guy who killed the 200-incher.
No, he definitely has to eat one.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm going to try really hard to kill a 200-incher this year. Then I want to taste one of them oranges. You'd be one of the very few.
That's
people.
When we all put our keys. Lock them away because no one can drive home.
If you take a bite of that, orange, you're passing out in 2 seconds. Yeah,
run straight to the toilet.
Yeah.
Well, you'd be one of the few people on the planet Earth that say they ate an orange from the
1971.
70s. From the 70s.
Woof.
As old as Larry.
What the?
Well, that's just uncalled for.
I need that on a sound pad button, that song, just preloaded.
Uh-huh. You did. If I had long enough arms, I'd reach over and slap the shit right out of you.
Hit it with the sign.
Hey, he'll do it too.
That's
why I made this table wider.
That's why
I knew you were coming. You know it's coming. I knew he was going to slap the shit out of me.
Exactly. New things are going to get spicy.
Hey, I got your fly.
Curls. Did you
on
get
your
it?
Face? No.
I almost got
it's
it.
It's on your hat.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Get it.
Smack your head on your hat.
Smack him.
Oh, come on. Moment of truth.
Moment of truth.
Oh, you got it. Dude, double lunger.
Can't use that hat.
Is he down?
Yeah, he's down. He's down. Hey,
we can't use the hat now. I mean, it's done for him. But
dang. Yeah. That's a one-blade hat. Look at that. That's the first thing that's ever died during a podcast.
In studio.
It was a freaking booner, too.
It was, too. Could put a saddle on that son of a bitch and run him around in here.
Your season's already killing it, man.
Yeah.
That was impressive. We got him.
This is Ryan's year.
Yep.
You're in.
Right there.
Behind the camera.
You're that guy, pal.
You're that guy, pal.
Hey, I'll tell you right now. Ryan is one of those guys I'm like, I'll be like, all right, hey, I'm gonna film you tonight. He's like, no, you're not. I'm like, yeah, I am. No, you're not.
Usually any other camera guy would be like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, I can do that?
Yeah. No, which is, I mean.
He loves it. He's passionate about it.
Yeah, passionate about, capturing stuff behind the lens. But But two, I'm passionate about going out and sharing the experience and making sure that everybody's, you know, getting a feel of, you know, what nature has to offer, I guess. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
You know, because last year in Nebraska, it was, well, I'll tell the story real quick, I guess.
I guess. Hey,
we have time.
Yeah, we have time. No, we went and we set up some trail cameras and we're, you know, just basically off of aerial maps, you know, mm-hmm. looked and we were getting pictures of pretty good deer in full velvet and literally.
You guys hunting whitetails out there?
Yeah,
last
we
year?
Were hunting whitetails and so we go in there and it was super, super hot one day. And I mean, like 101. Oof. I mean, just a scorcher.
Miserable.
So we were like, we're not going to go hunt this evening. And we put a cell camera up there. We had like one bar of service. And I'm like, man, well, I hope it sends any photos and stuff. All of a sudden, bing, you know, bing, about six, you know, right, probably, you know, plenty of shooting light left. Bzz, phone vibrates.
Shit.
I'm like, are you shitting me? And it's the freaking buck right there. I mean, he's right there, broad daylight. And we're like, are you kidding me, man? There's no way. So the next day, we don't even look at the weather, you know. We go.
We're going.
We're like, we're going. I don't care if it's 109. We're freaking going.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go. We climb up in a tree. And I'm telling you, the bottom dropped out. The temperature dropped. Front moved in. And it's probably 30-mile-an-hour winds. And we are freezing our little gonads off. I mean,
you wouldn't expect hot weather.
It's crazy. It is absolutely, I mean, windy, cold. We're definitely not dressed for it. And we're like, well, there ain't no way we're seeing anything tonight because it was that bad. So we're just sitting there, you know, shooting the shit and talking and laughing and everything else. And Ryan looks over and he's like, holy crap. There he is. And we look and I just got a glimpse of his antler. And it's windy, so windy. I got my toe wrapped around the tree. Ryan's like, are you good? I'm like, well, I don't know about that, but I was like, yeah.
You like, ever hung a stand and like you thought the tree was pretty stable?
Yeah.
And then you got up there and it was windy and you're like, oh yeah, this is not good.
Right.
This is not good. Like, I looked over, he's got his arm wrapped around the tree next to us. Trying to stabilize the camera because he was swinging so far.
And I got my foot out, literally wrapped around, and my toe is around the tree to try to keep it from bouncing back and forth.
Veteran cameraman move.
Right, using other trees to stabilize a whole other tree. Right?
Yep. Yeah,
the deer walks out, and I'm like, he's like, you on him? I was like, I got him. And he shoots, unfortunately, just right over his back, which it happens. And then
couldn't have been at like a better spot. Like when you range spots and you're like, okay, that's exactly 20 yards. That's exactly 30 yards.
Yeah.
He walked right to the spot where it was exactly 30 yards. And it was one of those moments where I just could not get the pin to come down.
Oh,
I was like, it was sitting on his back and I just could not get it to go down. And with the wind, I was like, there it is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I let it go, and as soon as I went to hit that trigger, like I knew,
you're like, oh fuck,
it came back up.
It just felt bad.
Yeah, as soon as I let go, I was like, I missed.
Yeah,
like
better than a wound.
But yeah,
better than a wound.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, so we're sitting there, you know, pissing and moaning about that and all that, and I'm like, man, it's fine, you know, it's deer hunting. Well, you know, there's plenty of deer out there. We'll go find one or whatever, maybe he'll come back or whatever later, and we'll shoot him 2 or 3 days from now.
Yeah.
So there's another deer we're getting pictures of, and he was using the same exact, literally the same exact pattern that this deer was, and the next day, what, 2 days later, Ryan?
It was the next day.
It was the next day?
Yep.
Okay, so the next day we went in and were like, there's no way, you know, 2 days in a row, we're going to have a buck come in there.
Well, that would be 3 days in a row, right? Because didn't he come out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 He was daylight the day before. Yep.
Yep. So that'd been 3 days in a row, but while we were in the tree. So we get up there and we're sitting there, and I'll be damned. Deer comes out, comes walking down.
Same exact spot.
Same exact spot, and walks right down pattern, getting ready to go over to a big bean field to feed. And he walks literally
the same exact spot where he met.
And I tell you what, when my mind was playing tricks on me, when that pin was still sitting on his spine, like I could not get it to go down. I'm glad he stood there for a really long time and let me settle that back thing back down, because it was just in my head then. Like I kept on thinking, like,
it's like a block, do not at that point.
Aim high. And then that pin was like, you're aiming high. I can tell you, like, mine was just playing tricks on me. And finally, it came back down. And once I settled in,
that's where he's like, Larry, push my bow down.
Larry's just walking around the camera with your toe.
Like, it's different for me. Like, we were talking about the other day, like, I have to have time to settle myself in, because if I don't get rid of it in 0.5 seconds, after that, my mind starts playing tricks on me. And I want to get away from where I want to aim. And I have to, like, concentrate my brain to just calm down. Even when I'm shooting at a target, I have to, that first initial time I get that pin on that spot, it starts to dance a little bit. And then I have to tell myself, hey, slow down, move it back down. And then after that, I can hold it there for a long, long time and really work on myself. But
that's what they say, hunting is a mental game.
It really, really is.
When you shoot at a deer, Larry, if you have your pin, like, how... what's your, like, thought? Like, how long are you aiming?
My thought press goes right into killing.
Get rid of it.
Yeah.
You're getting rid of that arrow. I mean, as quick as you can.
That's just me. I'm one of those that's, if my pin's there, I'm going to send it. I mean, I listen to Ryan.
Anyone in the future that is ever filming Larry, if it is not me, get on the deer. Because he is in straight kill mode. He's going to get rid of it. Like, you'll recognize the tendencies Larry has. He'll settle in. It's like a boom, boom. He'll settle that in that last third time, and poof, that arrow's gone. Yeah. I mean,
that gone pin, like once a that pin fart gets... in the wind.
it's gone.
See, I don't know. I feel like I take a little bit of time, but I don't know if it's my adrenaline kind of like slowing things down a little bit. Like, I'm like ultra focused, and it feels like it's longer than it is, but I don't know.
Feels like it's three hours.
It's easy to get wrapped up in that moment. I mean,
It really is. I mean, there's times that I do, like, consciously I'm listening to, because of the filming aspect of it. I know, you know, if Ryan says no, which we'll tell that story about Dagger here in just a second, but that was the only time. But the but
I said no, Bo, no.
Yeah.
I thought you said go, Bo, go.
I mean, I'll listen. If he says no, then it kind of tells me, you know, I'll definitely, you know, let down or listen at that point. But if it's go time and I know the situation, okay, I know he's got a clear shot,
yeah,
or whatever. I mean, my mind goes into, I mean, honestly, straight kill mode.
Kill that deer.
Like, my pin is usually on that deer prior to, depending on the situation. And, like, if I stop him, it's there. There's not going to be a lot of time. There's been a lot of situations where I've, bleeded that deer and they've, you know, come out of their skin.
That worries me a lot.
You know, and a lot of it has to do with the distance in between where the deer is when you bleed them and bleed at them to stop them and all that. I mean, every situation is different. But it's just one of my pins there. It's like, I know. It's kind of like instinctive shooting, too, you know. Guys that shoot, you know, look at Austin. You know, Austin will tell you, too, you know, you look at where you want to hit. That's where you focus on. Let it rip.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Some people will and really your pin seems to gravitate to that position once you're in that focal range. I mean, it's, you know, when you're focused on, okay, the deer's quartered away and I need to hit the, you know, middle rib so it exits behind the front shoulder on the opposite side or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's just
total mental game.
It's literally just focused in on that. But
yeah, I will say too, like, it's fun filming a producer, because I honestly, most of the time he knows what I'm looking for, even though he's hunting.
Right.
So he doesn't put me in very many situations where I have to call him off, because he knows, like, I can't shoot there because you don't have a window there.
Right.
You know, he's pretty, he's pretty keen on what I got behind the lens.
He's not just thinking about the animal and everything. He's thinking about you also.
Yep. He sees through the lens more than he does when he's actually hunting.
Right.
So it makes it easy.
That probably helps a lot.
Yeah, it makes my job easy a lot of times.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a good, you guys kind of have like a dream team when it comes to producing a show.
Yeah, filming a producer is nice.
The dynamic duo.
Versus you get one of us, we're just like,
I'm killing that slow.
We're just out there.
You're on them, right? Okay, I don't record yet.
So I mentioned Dagger earlier. Dagger is a deer I killed actually with a crossbow. Shoot, it was 2 or 3 years ago. Anyway, it was a deer that, I mean, this deer was ancient. He was old, had a real goofy side. And I had so much history with this deer over the years, but I'd never seen the deer on the hoof. I had, I mean, hundreds of trail cam photos of this deer.
Mm-hmm.
And this deer just had my number. Never seen the deer on the hoof. So literally, we hung a set on the total opposite side of the farm, where it's like, we ain't going to see shit over here. You know, it's like, we don't ever see shit over here. I'm like, well, dude, that's, you know, we ain't seen him over there either. So
this is the first time he's ever invited me to this place to film him, too. So this is the first time I'm seeing it.
So we go over there. We get set up. I'm like, all right, here we are. And I look over, and the trail camera we have down to cell camera, it's about, I don't know, what was it? It was probably 80 to 100 yards down the ridge on this bend where this trail comes up out of the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And my phone goes off, and we ain't seen shit. All night, you know, we're like, you know, it's like you see shit all night. So we're sitting there. I'm like, holy crap, it's Dagger, you know. So by the time the trail camera sent the photo and stuff,
he's already out, he's on top of you, probably. Here.
I'm like, oh shit, dude, Dagger just walked in front of that camera.
Yeah, 5 minutes
like,
ago,
Ryan's like, deer. Coming down. So I look up, and this deer is just sitting around. He's freaking eating acorns, just taking his own sweet little time. Coming down the side of this ridge.
Just all nimble.
And I pull up my glass, and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. It's Dagger.
It's dark.
And Ryan's thinking, who the hell's Dagger? You know, and all this. And then
he gets up there,
uh-huh. And I'm like, dude. And I'm like, it's Dagger. And that's pretty much what Ryan said. It's dark. And I was like, all right, what time is it? I looked at the watch. I was like, all right, we've got like 5 minutes before legal shooting light. He's like, dude, we're in the deep part in this big valley, so it gets dark soon.
You have no camera light.
Camera
light's gone, and we got like 5 minutes of shooting light left, and this deer is literally standing at 18 yards. And I look up at Ryan, I look at him, he's like, and I go, bump the gain.
Do whatever you can.
Dude, I'm like, zoom out or whatever. He's like, I have. yep, I did that as well. I was like, shit, I just let down. Because I was a full draw. I was ready. Like, I was in full send mode. I was like, I am going to kill Dagger right now.
That's the only time he told me that. Like, I was cussing like, under his breath. Like,
yeah.
Everything in the book.
So I let the bow down, just hung it up, and we sat there in the dark, and he walks up literally 10 yards from the tree. I mean, puts on a show. He starts making a
seem clear as day with the eyes. Yeah. I mean, he's just right there.
How does it screw that camera, dude?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We let him walk off. So anyway, we go in there like Two days later, we go into the same set because the wind's right, and we get set up, and it's literally, probably middle afternoon. We got in there fairly early, and I look down the ridge just out of the blue, and I'm like, I caught a little movement, and I was like, what the hell? That looks like a deer. And I throw my binos up and look, and I was like, holy crap, that's Dagger. Again,
and Ryan's probably like, "Who the hell is that deer?"
And Ryan's like, "Where's he at?" And I was like, "He's down the bottom, you know." And he was probably 150 yards in. And I am not kidding you; it was like it was meant to be. The deer turned. I mean, he was totally headed the wrong direction, and the deer just turned,
came up the ridge,
came right up the ridge on a string, and turned sideways on the trail. And I'm like, Okay. And so I had a Tacticam on the top of the crossbow. It was the first year I ever killed with a crossbow. And I was like, I forgot to turn it on. And this deer standing, I mean, he walks all the way up to like 12 yards and he turns broadside right there. And I'm like, holy cow, are you serious? And, you know, is this really happening? So I realize I'm like, got the crosshair right on him. I'm like, I look up, I'm like, crap, the Tacticam's not running. So I was like, reach up. I'm like, turn it on.
At 12 yards.
Yeah, 12 yards. I'm like, reach up, turn it on. Ryan's like, what are you doing? You're bitching me out the night before. Because, yeah, you know, because he's right there. I'm like, all right, now I'm all about, we got to get every piece of footage. Right, right. Yeah,
you know, I'm a change man.
So I reached over, turned the Tacticam on, and luckily I got away with it. And I ended up smoking him. But yeah, I was like, that's what's so crazy is because we had, literally, of that deer in particular, we had, I don't know how many trail cam photos of that deer over the course of probably 3.5 years, and never seen him on the hook.
Isn't that crazy?
It is.
This is nuts that the deer can do that.
Yeah.
You know? That's what makes him so cool, though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
I think. Or, you know, that's what's cool about you freak out when you see one like
that. And you know it's him.
Yeah, and that's the prime example right there. That buck right there, with mature deer on the farm, I was just as jacked up about killing that deer. Ain't going to score worth a shit. But just because history. Of the history we had with in that story, I knew, you know, the HR knowing, I was like, man, I was so jacked up just to run an arrow through that deer and actually lay my hands on that deer.
Makes it way, awesome. Way cooler.
Yeah, you know.
It makes it worth it.
It was just cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I would have shot that deer the first night.
Heartbeat.
I would too. Yeah.
But I'm not committed to a camera, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, man, if I got like a 170 buck comes in, I'm like trying to make a show, I'd be the worst guy to have on a TV show.
Yeah.
We had a dollar for every time a deer come in when we couldn't get on camera and we killed it, we'd be sitting pretty good.
Yeah. Ain't no kidding.
Strong-willed. I mean,
tough.
You know, if
yell at me later.
If Working Class Bow Hunter was a hunting show, maybe we'd commit a little different, but we'd be a terrible hunting show.
We would.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, the thing is, though, is
terrible.
Oh, but we'd be the worst.
You guys did pretty good. Nebraska was pretty good.
Yeah,
you guys. We're naturals, but you know.
Yeah, we're naturals.
It is what it is.
We have killed some deer and turkeys, and we've killed stuff on film.
Uh-huh.
But I just mean, when you get us in a situation like that.
Film over deer.
Oh. Film over deer. Well.
I'm deer over film.
I'm deer every time.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it depends. If we go out and we're, for some reason, it's like, hey, we're going on this trip, and Ryan, you're going with Kurt. Then I'd probably be like, all right, well, this is different now.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Well, let me tell you, we're going to change the game up a little bit on turkeys. This year, I mean, obviously, you know, people know the turkey situation around the country. Turkeys were down.
Yeah.
Populations were down. It's all over the internet, all over everything, you know. But we went to Kansas and early season for the archery opener. And I was like, we're going to do something a little bit different. I said, I'm going to grab my layout blind, which is what you hunt waterfowl out of.
like geese and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I go out. I actually put the layout blind right in the middle of decoys.
And of turkey decoys.
It worked.
Oh, and.
So much better than I thought it would on paper.
Yeah. Oh. So people think you're going to be laid down and draw your bow back because we're bow hunting.
So you're putting out a spread of like your goose hunting.
No, we put out like just a regular, you know, a strutter and a couple hens, you know. But I literally have a strutter like literally 4 yards, 5 yards from my feet.
And you're bow hunting.
Bow hunting. So I'm literally sitting there
laying in a
wheat field I'm just sitting up because it's got a back and I don't even tuck all the way down into the layout line. I'm just sitting there. I've got a bow pot on my bow sitting between my legs. And we have this Tom come in. We start calling. This Tom comes in. And
are you in a layout blind also?
No, he's filming from behind me. This will be on a show coming up. And dude,
it's cocky.
Oh,
it's cocky.
It was. I'm like, I have never been so amped up on a turkey in my entire life.
So your bow's in a bow pod? Pretty much,
literally sitting like right between my legs. I'm just sitting there laid down just like this and just sitting up, bow pad. I got a mask on, hat, sitting there. Decoy is literally from me to you.
No
literally,
kidding.
Literally from me to you.
So when you draw, did you have to pick up the bow off the ground?
Well, hold on. Just
I'm sorry. I'm getting excited.
Yeah.
I'm getting excited.
So this bird comes in. We see some hens come over the hill. And this bird, Tom's falling. So I start calling, right? And the hens turn around and beeline right to me.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes the Tom. The hen, I'm sitting there like this, and I'm like, shit, should I pick up my bow or what? Because the Tom's like doing that little waddle. I'm coming into the decoy rope.
Yeah, no I'm a badass.
Old boobies flopping off.
The shuffle. Yeah.
So the hen's like literally stand right here, and she just starts going, meow. I'm like, and you could probably hear me, Mike, like, what the hell?
Well, it was like one of those moments where, like, when you're behind the camera, you don't realize how close everything is. You're just, right. You're looking at the screen, and then I looked out behind, and I'm not kidding, the hen is from, I mean, like, she's is like, Doug, what? And Larry's sitting here in the blind.
Yeah.
I mean, she's 3 feet outside the blind, just looking right at Larry, going, dop, 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 dop.
Yeah, and that Tom just stops, comes in the full truck strut, comes around, and I'm just sitting there, and I got my hand right there through the bow sling around the grip. I'm just sitting there, and I'm calling real soft. He comes around, starts whooping the crap of the decoy. And I'm talking jumping the decoy to the point to where the decoy starts spinning, and I thought he was going to fall off the decoy.
Into your lap?
Yeah. So I'm just sitting like, holy crap. And, dude, my heart's just going.
Oh, I bet. I can't even imagine at that point.
Well, so he spins around, and I'm sitting there like this, and the turkey finally goes around the decoy, puts whooping, and starts going around the decoy. And once he gets around, I actually made it to full draw. I'm like, number one, I couldn't believe I made it to full draw.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And then, second of all, I totally rushed my shot and missed that something. Yeah, I missed that. I missed that turkey. I am not kidding you, but I bet 3 feet.
Just got excited because it was so much.
I was so worked up.
I don't feel as bad as my miss now in Nebraska.
Yeah, it was bad. No, it was right
there. Yours
is
pretty bad.
It was right there.
He turned around and he looked at me and he's like, He's like, I did everything you're not supposed to. I rushed my shot. I punched the trigger. I didn't put my head down on the string. He's like, everything you shouldn't do when you shoot a bow,
I did.
I did it all.
Yeah, that's what I said. I did it all.
He's like, I ain't even mad about it.
Well, it's going to be so intense that you're not thinking clearly.
It was
impressive
absolutely
to get by all them hens and everything.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I'm pretty excited for people to see it because the footage is absolutely awesome. Like I said, in a layout blind in the middle field. And to boot, the next day we go out, and this is no kidding. We set up in the layout blind again. I got the decoys out. A group of Jakes. We start calling to them. They come in, and they come right in, and I'm like sitting there. I start calling. They're gobbling like at my feet.
Yeah.
Just like that.
I have got 2 hours of footage at them within 10 yards of that layout blind gobbling right at him.
Yeah.
No kidding.
They're sitting there. They would not leave.
To the point to where they would go leave, I'd start calling, they'd come back. So they bedded down in the deal. So I get my phone out, FaceTime Paul Biggs, and I'm in a layout blind, and these turkeys are literally
laying there,
uh-huh. These Jakes. And I'm like, hey, Jake. And Paul's like, where in the hell are you hunting at?
Turkey farm.
I was like, I have no idea. But I'm just telling you, if you shotgun hunt or bow horn or whatever, that may be a tactic to try. If you got those birds
with a shotgun, it'd be
If you got those birds that are just out in the middle of the field and you're like, you're watching for 3 days, like, that asshole will not move. He just stands out there. Yeah. I just watch him out in the middle of the field. Get a layup line, go out in the middle of the field, wait on him.
I might buy a tag to try
that. Just to try that?
It really worked so much better than I ever thought it would.
Do you have any of this footage with you tonight?
Maybe.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we got to watch some of that.
Yes.
Hey, I don't want to forget this because I know people heard on previous podcasts, but you're talking about, you know, it's on an upcoming episode. If someone's like, I really want to watch that, where can they watch it?
Respect the Game TV. You can watch on Sportsman's Channel Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern. Or no, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. Or you can go to YouTube. You can also go to
MOTV.
MOTV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Or just ask us. Shit, we'll show it to you.
Hell yeah.
I'll just show it to you.
Right. Yeah.
Just send you a link.
Yeah.
I wanted to cover that, you know, because I like the show a lot. I think you guys do a great job. It's cool that we know you guys. That always helps too, you know.
Mm-hmm. But that's my boy Larry on TV.
That's my boy. You're my boy Blue.
My boy Blue.
Lorenzo.
Larry will have to start introducing himself. You know, Larry Mack, Respect the Game TV Outdoor Group. I run the Doug's and Mustache Facebook or Instagram page. Yeah, exactly.
I'll show my kids that when I'm older.
Yeah.
When I'm older. That was my mustache.
We need to get some memes from our listeners saying, I'm going to tell my kids this was Dale Earnhardt. And a picture
of you. Right. It's a picture of me.
Stupid.
Yeah.
So funny.
Tell my kids this was Ron Jeremy.
Yeah. Well,
Kind of.
Close enough, I guess.
Yeah, kind of. About, what, 4 inches short?
Plus or minus.
Or more.
No. Easy.
Or more.
Let's not spread incorrect rumors.
Hey, listen.
Hey, it is what it is. You know?
It was a test. I wanted to see how you'd react.
Yeah.
I appreciate you guys coming into the studio, man. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad I finally got to do an in-studio podcast. And not, I mean, they're fun at trade shows. Don't get me wrong. But this is just different. It's a better feel. It's fun to hang out before, you know, get to talk and then hang out after and not feel like normally like one of us has to go run off and do something or, you know, there's people coming by the booth, which is, you know, it's fun recording there. Just
absolutely,
you know, not the same as being here and being able to like legitimately tell stories like that, you know?
Right. So. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you, like I said, I follow you all on social media, and number one, thank you for having us. But to see the studio firsthand has definitely been an experience, and to see the hard work you all have put into this, the making this platform grow. Number one, we're Elite Archery's proud to have you all as a partner. Respect the Game is as well. You're part of our family as well. So we look forward to more podcasts and also more hunts together.
Yeah, hopefully some camp podcasts here in the future.
They're always fun.
Never shared a hunting camp with you guys, so we got to make that happen.
Yeah, we're going to make that happen. I've 100%.
Antelope camp soon. I like antelope, man.
I'll tell you right now. Oof.
Oof, you go.
Oof.
Oof. I love them. Oof. That'd be fun.
Oof-ta.
Oof. I just feel like a lot of animals and a lot of action. I wish I had a button.
Yeah, I wish you had a button. I took care of your button for you.
Yeah, Larry. Button. I'm dry. But no, man, we're super thankful to have Elite.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Slick Trick. And I mean, we shoot Scott releases and all that. Mm-hmm. We're fans of pretty much everything Outdoor Group puts out and the people behind it. And everybody's been great. So we appreciate your guys' friendship first and then, you know, partnerships and all that and good people. It's been amazing. So
yeah, 100%. Likewise, it's you know, we appreciate you all as well, and we look forward to you know, to the future. You know, the industry is headed the right direction. I think more hunters are getting more involved in the outdoors. Obviously, tag sales and stuff have been up through multiple states through the draws, and I mean, that means we're out there, we're getting our message out there, and I think all the listeners need to, you know, help do their part as well. You know, if they can get somebody out there, take them hunting. Oh, let's do it. You know, we can grow it all together.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Agreed. Yep. Where can people follow you guys?
RespectTheGame.tv. You can go to Instagram, Respect the Game, Facebook, Respect the Game. Also, you know, Larry Mack at Instagram. Ryan has got an Instagram as well. Ryan Heuser, H-E-U-S-E. Or it's not Hauser, it's Heuser.
I say Hauser.
I say Hauser every time. Exactly. However you want to say it, it's all right.
Yeah.
Or
so
Heuser.
I just had to throw that out there. So just come follow us. If you've got questions or anybody has questions about, you know, anything, their bow set up, it doesn't matter whether you're shooting a lead or not. I mean, the shootability challenge too, one thing we didn't cover is it's not about saying you have to buy an Elite. It's basically all it's saying is if you're in the market for a new bow, let Elite be a part of that conversation.
Just shoot one.
Yeah, go shoot one. Yep. You decide for yourself. Mm-hmm. That's all it is.
It's like a pair of pants. Everyone's fits different.
Right. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, we want every archer to be comfortable and be happy. Mm-hmm. And so regardless of the brand, get out there, shoot your bow.
I like that, man. Honest and real. And, you know, if you've been wondering about one, we get a lot of questions. Go shoot one. Mm-hmm. Find a dealer. Support your local dealer.
That's right.
And we got a discount code.
WCB, shipped to a local dealer from Elite's website. Support everybody.
Supports
us. Supports Elite.
Support it's a win-win, man.
It's a
I think that's a positive note to end on.
It is.
Appreciate you, fellas.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.